Okay, is that going to work? All right. My name is Bob Kuhn. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 5th, 1978. It just happened. This was a pure accident, but it was my wife's birthday when I got sober. And I was standing in my kitchen in my beautiful home in Mill Hills in front of the kitchen sink, and I was all alone. And I had a family, wife and five kids, nice family, and there I was all alone. The thing that brought me to that was drinking. I had no reason to drink because of my family of origin. I lived in a lovely home. I felt loved, happy as a clam when I was a little kid. I had an older brother and two sisters. My dad was a mailman, very ho-hum kind of guy. And he filled that home with love and safety. I couldn't have been safer. I couldn't have been loved more. And why did I create a crazy house as an alcoholic? I thought, you know, a lot of alcoholics have an alcoholic father and they say, man, I don't want to be like him. Well, I had this ho-hum father who's a wonderful guy, but his life was dull. And I said to myself, I don't want to be like that. I want to screw around and have some fun. And so I did that. I was a good student, got through high school okay, and went to school at UMass, which is a school very similar to San Diego State. It was a party school. I went, joined a fraternity. We drank every Friday night at beer parties. It was just a boozy. We had a bar in the house, in the fraternity house, and it was a party on school. And when I did graduate, it took me one extra semester, but I got through with a degree. I had an interview in Boston for a job in San Diego, and in January, it was raining, there was snow on the ground, and this guy showed me a little film clip of San Diego in January. I thought, man, that looks good. So I signed up, got a job. I had a little trouble with the police. By this time, right after I turned 21, I got my first DUI, and I got I think there was one other drunk arrest, and the day I finished finals, I went into the little town of Amherst. There was a little bar there called Barcelona's. I got drunk, and I picked a fight with a cop on the street, and it was 40 degrees below zero, and I spent the night in the drunk tank where there was no heat. So I had a little issue, I guess, with the law that when I was out in public drinking. But I came to San Diego on Route 66 with everything I owned in my car, and the road ended at Mission Beach. And I thought, man, this is beautiful. I got a little apartment, bachelor pad in Mission Beach, and had a good job at Convair, and I was cruising, man. I love little scruffy beach towns like that, and everything was great. Well, I started having little run-ins with the law here in San Diego, too. And the cops were always very nice to me. One night I got picked up on Main Street, and I was passed out, and I woke up in the drunk tank, and they give you a little pink slip that tells you where your car is. So I'm back to get my car. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. And it was in front of a gas station, and the guy that had been there working that night was still there. So he told me, he says, I watched it all happen, and there was a black and white sitting right here watching it. You were out there, made two U-turns, stopped for the red light, and passed out. The engine running. Well, the little pink slip just says drunk in public, and my car was parked there. I had my keys. That was it, you know, slap on the wrist. I didn't even lose my license. And that came to the attention of my employers that I was getting a list of things going on downtown. And they called me in, and they said, if you get another arrest, you're out of here. We don't want you representing our company. So, you know, I was an alcoholic then. I didn't know it, but I got a DUI, and they fired me. And I thought, oh, man, this is bad. So it was in July when it happened, and I thought, I got to do something. They didn't, on my exit paperwork, they said, you can put down anything you want. We won't write this down, but you're out of here. So I wrote down that I'm going back to school. So, well, I guess I better go back to school. So I signed up at State College and went back there for a year and got a master's degree. And there another, it was part of my drunkalogue. I met this girl in Mission Beach at a party, at my little bachelor pad there at a party. She was there with a friend of mine, and I happened to be without a date that day. So, and we had a keg of beer and a party on the beach, typical Mission Beach thing. And it was 4th of July weekend, and that was on a Saturday. I met this girl, and she's with this other guy, and we were kind of attracted to each other. And the next day, she came back to the house, and my wife loves to tell this story about her red bikini. That's what she was wearing, but she wasn't wearing it for long. We spent the weekend in my apartment in Mission Beach, and when she left, she was pregnant. We didn't know that. Well, what do you do when, you know, this gal is going to have a nice girl, she's going to have a baby? What do you do? Well, she says, I can't have the baby here in San Diego. This was in 1960. Girls didn't have babies then without a husband around. So she said, take me to Vegas, I'll get a job over there and have the baby there. So good old Bob, that's what I did. I drove her to Vegas, dropped her off, paid the rent for a week. And I figured, that's that. I came back and went my merry way back in my bachelor pad in Mission Beach. You know, thinking back, how could any decent person do something like that to a young woman? I did it. Didn't think too much about it. And I thought I was a nice guy, you know. Well, the drinking went on, and I got... I went back to State College, and it never occurred to me that I should stop drinking. I just had to stop getting arrested. So I finished up at State College and sent a bunch of resumes out looking for another job. And it began to dawn on me, when you send a resume out, they send you an employment application, you fill that out. And on those employment applications, it says, in those days, it was legal to say, have you ever been arrested? Well, yeah. Explain. Attach a separate sheet if necessary. So I printed up this separate sheet of my arrest record. And I sent back all those employment applications, and I never heard from them again. I thought, oh, this is serious. So I went up, went to L.A. and looked in the Sunday paper, and I was cruising L.A., got hooked up with a headhunter, and had a job interview up there. And that was, I probably sent out 20 applications, filled out 20 employment forms, and this one place didn't have that question on the application. So I didn't say anything, and they hired me. And in the business I was in, I had to get a security clearance, and it all came to light when I had to fill out the forms for security clearance. Well, those guys were really nice to me. I didn't lie when I went in, but I didn't tell the whole truth. And they stuck by me and got my clearance re-upped, and I was back in the business. And that was just by the skin of my teeth that I stayed in that job. And I had... You know, I loved the work I was doing. It was fun. I loved to go to work, and I was making good money, and everything was fine again. And I came back to San Diego and went to work for Ryan because I wanted to be in San Diego. I love this town. And when I went in there, I took a big risk because I had been in this other job for 2 years, came back, and I knew some people at Ryan that I had known from before at Convair, and they wanted me to go to work for them. But I had this separate list. And when I filled it out for them, I kept the separate list separate, and I took it to this guy in the employment office. He's dead now. His name was Jack Gregg, wonderful guy, but he wasn't drunk. And I drank with him after I hired him. But he saw that. I said, Jack, I don't want this to get passed around and become a gossip column in the office, so I'm going to give you this separate sheet. So he showed it to the people that he had to. And when he first looked at it, he says, oh, you had a run of bad luck, didn't you? Because there's this list of about 10 arrests, and all within a couple of years, a few years. And he let it go. He let it by. And so I went to work for this bunch of guys, and there were a lot of drinkers there, and it was a great job, and I loved it. And I managed to keep from getting arrested. Don't ask me how, because I was still drinking. Well, this is another story my wife loves to tell, but I'll keep it a lot shorter than she tells it. My beautiful bachelor pad in Mission Beach burned down. I was on the, there used to be a little golf course over there on the island out in the middle of Mission Bay, and I was playing golf there with my neighbor, and we're coming back towards our house, and I said, there's a big fire over there. Look at all the smoke. And she says, that looks pretty close to our house. She lived in the other half of this duplex. We got there, and it was my house. It was burning down. And, in retrospect, I really started the fire because the mattress, I was making the bed before we left. The mattress caught on fire. Poured a glass of water in it and went off to the golf course. That doesn't work, I found out. Anyway, the gal in the red bikini saw the item in the paper about my house burning down. She called me and she said, anything I can do for you? And I said, well, maybe you could cook me a meal. I'm sleeping under the pier. And so she cooked me a meal, and I said, maybe we ought to get married. But my son was 2 years old by this time. So she didn't waste any time. Within 2 weeks, she had the wedding all arranged. And we got married the day after my son turned 2 years old. And she was hanging out waiting for me because she wanted her son to have his father. Well, I explained to her that I'm a drunk. And her father was a drunk. Her attitude was, I can fix that. Well, it took a while. I drank for another 15 years. And after she had all she could stand, she went to Al-Anon. And that worked. After a couple of years in Al-Anon, she told me, either you go to AA or I'm leaving. So I had a beautiful family, 5 kids by that time. One of them's here. My little baby is here. We had a hectic life. You know, I mentioned how quiet the home I grew up in was. The house we were in with 5 kids, 5 teenagers, a crazy wife, and a drunken husband. You know, if you live with somebody that you love and he's an alcoholic and he's drinking himself to death, you go crazy. And that's what happened to her. She loved me. She watched me drinking, and she went crazy. But she went to Al-Anon. She asked her friends at the church, what can I do? And her own priest said, I can't help you, go to Al-Anon. So she did, and it worked. She learned how to deal with a drunken husband. And finally, she laid down a law. She says, either you go to AA or I'm leaving. So I went to AA. And I stopped drinking for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, I stopped shaking. I filled one of those glasses. And I did this right in front of her. I said, see, I'm not shaking anymore. I'm not an alcoholic. And I drank that. And she packed up the kids and disappeared. I didn't know where she was. So that's when I was standing at the kitchen sink all alone. In this beautiful house, nobody there. Well, I said to myself, this is after I had quit drinking for 2 weeks, and then I went on this end it all binge, and that's when she left. And I figured this has got to stop. And Monday morning, I took the last of the booze and poured it down the sink. And I'm a cheap son of a bitch. That was therapeutic for me to pour that booze out, and I haven't had a drink since. And after, we were seeing each other in passing. She was going Al-Anon, I was going AA, and she came up to me about a month later. She says, is it all right if I come home? And I was starting to learn a little bit about the program. I said, you do whatever you want. I'm not drinking. Well, she came back. The kids came back, and we started having a life together again, and it was a lot better. I had a neighbor named Joe Olson. He was a wonderful guy, lived right next door. And he wanted to circulate a petition around the neighborhood to get that family out of the house next door, because it was a crazy house. It was doors slamming, glass breaking, yelling, screaming going all the time. And this is nice, quiet neighborhood in Mission Hills. Occasionally somebody's sleeping on the front lawn, And his wife was a lovely woman. She said, Joe, you can't do that. That's not a Christian thing to do. So he moved away instead. Right after he moved away, in fact, was when I stopped drinking, and things quieted down. It got to be a lot nicer in that house. But it wasn't all fixed. My wife continued to go to Al-Anon, and I was going to AA. And at one point she says, you might as well be drinking. You're never here. You're off at AA all the time. And so I asked around, it seemed to me, my home group is Mission Hills Monday night, and it seemed to me like it was all people, formerly married people chasing each other around the room, And I said, aren't there any married people in AA that are successfully married? Well, I found some. I found a couples group of people in AA and in Al-Anon that were married, and they were helping each other stay married. And that's exactly what I needed at that time, and it saved our marriage. We were both, she was in recovery in both a Christian program and in Al-Anon. I was in AA, and we were recovering separately, but we didn't have a relationship. We couldn't get it working. Well, we went to this couples group, and it started working. They helped us start. Just the same way AA works, couples work the same way and get together and get it working. And it became a good marriage after many years of turmoil and ugly things happening. It became a good marriage. And my kids now say the first half was awful, but the second half was great. And that's kind of the way it was. It took us 10 years of sobriety, each of us recovering separately, to come together and get a marriage that worked. And I'm so happy that it did. It really pains me to see people getting divorced in their first year of sobriety. Because you get sober and you're a different person. And your spouse, if they're either, whether they're drinking or not, they change a lot when you stop drinking. And if you give it up in that first year or two after you're in sobriety, then you got to find somebody else and do it all over again. It says in a big book that we were incapable of having a relationship with another human being. Now think of that. I'm living in a house with six other people. I love them all. They love me, thank God. But I didn't have a relationship with any of them because I didn't know how. I didn't learn. My parents showed me. I didn't get the words of how to do it, but they showed me a stable marriage. They were married for 50 years. And they showed me how to do it, but I didn't get it. And somehow my higher power said, Bob, you didn't get it. I got to give you the alcoholism so you'll learn something about life. And that's what happened. When I first stopped drinking, I never had a desire to stop drinking. But I wanted the bad stuff that was happening as a result of my drinking to stop. And so I didn't drink, and I came here and I asked you guys, help me, please help me not drink. And you did. I remember talking to a guy named Mac. I said, Mac, I'd love to have a beef eater on the rocks for lunch. He says, okay, have that tomorrow. But tonight, go to bed sober. Well, that doesn't sound like a profound way to handle it, you know, but it works. If I can get through today without a drink, then I can start tomorrow and get through another day. Well, I've been sober a long time now, and it works. And it works because I'm a different person. And I didn't identify what was wrong and set about fixing it. I just did the steps because I was afraid to drink. I knew it would all collapse if I drank. And I white-knuckled the first 2 years without drinking, just going to meetings and going to coffee afterwards and not drinking. And then something happened. I was sitting in a meeting, a guy named Racetrack Charlie. This was in the Mission Hills meeting. The room used to be just chock full of people. Every seat was taken. There were shelves around. The people were sitting up there. People were out in the hall. It was full of smoke. And it was a great meeting. A lot of old-timers there. And one night, I'm sitting on this puke-colored pew that they had in there. And a guy named Racetrack Charlie was standing up in the back corner of the room, and he says, the big book says the desire to drink will leave you. And right at that minute, I thought, geez, I don't want to drink. This was after 2 years of white-knuckle sobriety. It occurred to me that the obsession to drink was gone. And I hadn't worked the steps. I had been to step study meetings. They have meetings then where you read the steps and say, yeah, I agree with that. But I didn't do them. But my higher power took away the desire to drink. And I thought, wow, this is nice. Well, there's a gal named Verna May in that meeting who was just starting the second round of a step study. They call it a committed step study, where you got in, you did a step every week, and at the outset, everybody goes around, they go around the room, and everybody says, I'll make a commitment to do the best job I can on doing the steps. Well, I had no idea what that involved, but I did it because I was so grateful to not want to drink every day. And so I did that. And I went through, we took 18 weeks to do the 12 steps. We took a few extra weeks on the fourth and fifth step and a little extra on the 12th. And it just by happenstance, I got my sponsor then. Every week you make a commitment. And after we did the fourth step, I said, I'll make a commitment to do the fifth step before we meet next week. Well, I didn't have a sponsor yet. So that's when I got a sponsor, when I was faced with doing the fifth step. And he was my sponsor until he died about 3 years ago. But anyway, we went through the steps together, and there was another guy that he was sponsoring in that same step study. And I went to have my license renewed. And I had just, prior to getting sober, I had an awful time with the DMV because of registration, just paperwork bullshit. And, you know, they say, here he comes again. We'll have some more fun with him with all these questions. Well, I went in and got my license renewed, and I came out of there in about 15 minutes with a smile on my face. And I went to my sponsor, Ben. I said, Ben, what's going on? Everything worked like greased lightning, you know. He says, the DMV hasn't changed. Guess what? I changed. I did the steps, and it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. It doesn't say you might get this. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. That happened to me. I didn't want it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't expect it, but it happened. And in that step study, what they do is pick a leader and a secretary to do the following one. Well, a guy named George and I got picked. I got picked to be the leader, And George got picked, and I figured, well, these guys recognize my managerial talents and all, you know. They recognize the fact that I really didn't get it all the first time. I better do it again. So I did it again, and it was magic. My sponsor got in it, too. My sponsor has been sober 3 years longer than me, so he was 5 years sober then. And when he watched the two of us go through the steps, he realized that he really hadn't gotten the full benefit of the steps. So he did it again with us. And it just worked a little more, you know. That's progress, not perfection. During that time, when I did the steps twice, my good friend John Loomer, I'm sure some of you know him, he's a very outspoken guy with opinions, and he was off in Vegas during that time that I went through the steps twice. And we were very close. We knew each other pretty well. He came back from Vegas. He saw me in the room there at Mission Hills. He says, "What happened to you?" I says, "Nothing, same old Bob." He says, "You're different." And I said, "Well, John, I did the steps twice while you were gone. I want to do that," he said. It was that much of an impact that I was different. And so he got in it and did it. And we formed a little group called the Ad Infinitum Group. There were about 12 or 15 of us that started collecting our sponsees and running those step studies. And so we were doing the steps over and over and over. 3 times a year we did that. And every once in a while I run into somebody who says, "Hey, I got sober in your living room. We did the steps." And that's a great feeling, man, to know that I was participating and working with others. And it was, you know, I was not really conscious of the promises. I didn't expect them to happen. I wasn't even sure what they were. But they happened anyway, because I've got a higher power that loves me and takes care of me. And I, you know, I don't understand this higher power business very much. But there's a force in the universe that affects me. And it's hard for me to think of that as a person, because a person, it's just something that knows everything. How can, you know, I'm convinced my higher power is interested in every detail of my life. Well, how can any power do that for everybody? The people in this room, and that's staggering to think of, but for everybody has got that power available. What kind of a power is that? It's not a person. It's not a guy with a beard. It's something I don't understand. But it works. I have had instances, those things like the employment applications, where while I was still drinking, my higher power was looking out for me. A lot of different things have happened. I changed jobs one time because I thought the company was going under, and through about a process of over a year, I ended up back in my old job because that was the job for me. I loved that job, and my higher power knew that that was the job I was supposed to have. So there I was in it. And, you know, stuff that I had no control over was happening to me as a result of my higher power. And when I was sober 27 years, I was cruising, man. I had retired from my job. My wife was retired. We bought a little trailer. We were traveling back east every year to Canada, where my mother was from Canada. And we went back and met a lot of people, and we just had a great life. I had a truck with a couple of kayaks on it, a trailer on the back, a bicycle in the back, and I rode a bicycle every day. We went back east and put the boats in the water and went fishing back there, and it was just a cool life. And my wife and I loved each other. We're getting along together. One thing we learned together was praying together. It may sound strange, and I wasn't a prayer-type person, but we got to the point where we prayed together almost every day, and you can't be mad or fighting with somebody that you're praying with. You know, we realized, see, my wife was a psychologist. She got a PhD in alcoholism. Because that's the kind of rescue she did on me. She worked down at, she was working for Mary Ryan down at the CARP unit, and she got a PhD in alcoholism. She, her dissertation, she had the material right at hand to do this. This dissertation, the title of her dissertation was Memory Loss in Adult Children of Alcoholics. Well, she's got an alcoholic resident. She had 5 children resident and all the material she needed to write this thesis. And so she knew what she was doing. She was well-trained, and I'm an engineer. I think differently than she was. She's a psychologist. And so we both learned that even though your solution is different from mine, it might work anyway. We have different ways of thinking about things. We have different ways of solving problems. And we learn to say, yeah, okay, let's try your way. And that works. I have a good friend, Martin, who I told the secret to marriage is just say yes. Well, Martin is gay. He doesn't care about marriage. But he says, that's wonderful. It works. You know, a lot of times my wife will I'll get to that. My wife would suggest something, and I've got a better way to do it, but I'll just say, okay, let's go do that, you know. And it works. It takes the contentiousness out of the relationship and makes it work. And those of you who are struggling with marriage, I'd recommend that you find a couples group. There are some around town. It's worth it. It saved our marriage, and our marriage was, as the kids said, the first half was horrible, but they could get away with anything with a drunken dad. But the second half was a marvelous thing to see with two people getting along together. Getting sober makes your life a lot easier, but it doesn't make it a piece of cake. I had a little boy, my youngest son, who was a crystal meth addict, and he didn't make it. I would have done anything to get him sober. Couldn't do it. And he was 42 years old, and he's gone. Just before that happened, I mentioned I rode a bike every day. I was in great shape. I was, you know, 71 years old. I didn't have this big gut. I was riding a bicycle every day, kayaking, playing golf a couple times a week. Man, I was cruising. And I was going to the Mount Soledad men's meeting on bicycling up that hill. And people say, you ride up that hill, 71 years old? Well, I was leaving that meeting, coming down the hill, and I hit a pothole and went flying over the handlebars and broke my neck. So I haven't ridden a bike since. My daughter won't let me, and that's good. But God took away my fitness, took away my son, and in the natural progression of life, I'm 77 years old now, my wife was 75, and she died last March, just respiratory failure, and so I got to deal with that. And I'll tell you, if I didn't have AA to help me deal with that and to find people who have been through the same thing and get their advice and their counsel and their love, I'd be sitting at home drinking. And so, you know, I've been sober 33 years, and I go to a meeting almost every day. Now, normies don't understand that. They say, what the hell is that all about? But I didn't listen to my parents about the lessons of how to live life. I have to listen to you guys and learn the lessons of how to live life. And, you know, sickness comes and goes. Death comes, and life goes. And that's the way it is. The higher power knows what's going on. I know there's been a reunion with my son and my wife, even though sometimes I think I live in this big house in Mission Hills, and I can still hear my wife wrestling around up there, you know, and I think, well, what's going on here? I'm crazy, you know. It's just, you know, it's good memories that are coming back. And my wife and my son, who was her favorite, of course, they got things going on. And I feel the influence of their aura, you know. My son was a real problem at times, but there were times when he would be clean and sober, and he loved to fish like I do. And we spent one of our trips back east. He went with us. We went fishing from Nova Scotia all the way down to Florida. We fished the whole East Coast in a kayak, like a couple of kids, you know, splashing around in the water, catching fish, having a great time. And, you know, God, my higher power, whatever it is, knows what He's doing. When I first got sober, I lost a lot of things that I was well rid of. Things that were bad for me were taken away. Well, now, recently, some good things were taken away. When I was being treated for this broken neck, I'd get passed on from one hospital to another, and every time they load the ambulance, they have this litany they read off about who this guy is, so they'll know what to do with him. And they said, this highly fit 71-year-old male Caucasian, right-handed, stuff like that. I kept hearing that thing over and over again. I thought, who the hell is that? Who are they talking about? But I was highly fit, and I'm not anymore. I had a great fishing buddy, my son. He's gone. A wonderful wife. She's gone. But the booze is gone, too. A good friend of ours, Dale knows him, Ray Murphy, he's gone now with over 50 years of sobriety. I remember when he came to the hospital, I was in Scripps with the broken neck. He looked he was out in the hallway, and I saw his head poking in the door, and he says, boy, he's a goner. With friends like that, how can you go wrong? But I want to thank you for letting me be here. Thank you for asking me, Mary. And it's a joy to share sobriety. And if any of you get anything out of this, great. Thank you.